Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to Recycle by Eurosport, a retrospective series on the most extraordinary riders and races in cycling history. This is another episode of Recycle recorded in isolation, away from the Eurosport studios. Recycle is written by Felix Lowe, narrated by me, Graham Wilgos, and produced by Pete Burton. In our previous episode, we revisited the tragic tale of one of cycling's larger-than-life heroes and Marco Pantani's swashbuckling victory at Madonna di Campiglio in the 1999 Giro d'Italia. It should have been Il Parata's crowning moment. Instead, the Italian's glory was quickly followed by scandal. He was kicked out of the race hours later while still wearing the Maglia Rossa, ending the defence of his title and sending his career and life into freefall. This edition of Recycle sees us wind back the clock a further 8 years to ride with another Italian climber reaching for the clouds. In a story of two summits, Spaniard Eduardo Chozas denied Italy's Claudio Chiappucci in the Giro d'Italia's first ever finish in the ski resort of Sestriere in 1991, 14 months before the Italian soloed to victory on the same climb in one of the most magnificent breakaways the Tour de France has ever seen. Claudio Chiappucci's name is synonymous with Sestriere. But a year before the Italian climber broke away to his legendary Tour de France stage win in the Italian ski resort, he came off second best in a test run during the 1991 Giro d'Italia. The man who beat him? Eduardo Chozas, a 30-year-old Spanish climber who, that year, would join the elusive club of riders to have finished in the top 20 of each of cycling's Grand Tours in the same season. Now a Eurosport pundit in Spain, Chozas capped a fine team performance as part of an Once squad that included 1982 Vuelta champion Marino Lajarreta to secure the seventh and last Grand Tour stage win of his career. He did so after a challenging double ascent of Sestriere, staving off a late surge by the man they called El Diablo on stage 13 of the 74th edition of La Corsa Rossa. Denying Chiappucci in front of hordes of Italian fans on the famous climb, Chozas put the celebrations on ice for the disappointed Tifosi, who would return to the climb in their droves during the following year's tour to see their man emerge from the footsteps of the great Fausto Coppi. Its proximity to the border with France means the Col Sestriere is one of the rare climbs used frequently in both the Tour and the Giro, dating back to 1911 when it made its bow in the third ever Giro d'Italia. Lucien Petit-Breton, the Frenchman raised in Argentina, led over the summit en route to becoming the first non-Italian stage winner in the race's history. In 1949, Coppi gobbled up the climb during his majestic Stage 17 win between Cuneo and Pinerolo. 3 years later, he capped his epic 190-kilometre solo break with victory on the Tour's first-ever summit finish at Sestriere, 2 days after the irrepressible Italian had triumphed on the race's inaugural ascent of Alpe d'Huez. The climb also provided the canvas for one of the best career victories for another rider whose story we've revisited in a previous episode of Recycle, Franco Crazy Heart Potosi. In 1964, in the closing kilometres approaching the summit, the Italian broke clear of compatriots Vittorio Adorni, Gianni Motta, and the eventual Giro winner that year, Jacques Anquetil. The Col Sestriere has three possible ascents, two from the west and one from the east. But it doesn't much matter which route you take, as journalist and author Chris Sidwells explains. It's not a long one, nor particularly hard, but iconic because of its strategic location and because of the men who made it so. Other champions to raise their hands aloft over its summit through the years include Miguel Indurain, Bjarne Riis, Andy Hampstead, Lance Armstrong, Jose Rujano, Alberto Contador, Fabio Aru, and Vasyl Kiryienka. Not to forget, of course, the colourful Chiappucci. But before Chiappi outdid Coppi with a breakaway even more incredible than the great man's 190-kilometre effort, he was held at bay by Chozas. The big favourite for the 1991 Giro was the dark, handsome and chiselled defending champion Gianni Bugno, who cited compatriot Chiappucci as his biggest rival. 12th in 1990, Chiappucci had gone on to finish runner-up in the Tour de France the previous summer, coming within one day in a botched time trial of denying Greg LeMond his third yellow jersey in Paris. Without a podium place all year, LeMond was also on the start list at the 1991 Giro, the American insisting before the Grand Partenza in Sardinia that he intended to be more competitive in Italy than in years past, despite riding primarily in preparation for July's tour. If not full-on beef, then there was certainly a thin sliver of bresaola between LeMond and the rider he dismissively called Cappuccino. Owing his stint in yellow in 1990 to getting in an opening day break that gained more than 10 minutes on the big guns, Chiappucci was viewed by many as a bit of a happy-go-lucky chancer, most notably by LeMond, who famously described him as nothing more than a bandit. His inability to race against the clock forced him to become a fearless aggressor, who needed long-range breaks to get in the mix for the general classification. Truth be told, Chiappucci's attacking instincts might have made him popular with the fans, but it hardly endeared him to his rivals. A sweet talker who reportedly put 3 spoonfuls of sugar in his breakfast muesli, the diminutive Italian was viewed as chippy, notoriously tight-fisted, and, on the bike, a law unto himself. He once came to blows with compatriot Moreno Argentine, who grumbled that he had the legs of a champion, but the mind of a child. In any case, Chiappucci was doing his utmost in 1991 to prove that his breakout tour was no fluke. The 28-year-old Carrera race had taken a leaf out of Bugno's book by winning Milan-San Remo after a long, lone breakaway. His stonking spring continued with victory in the Basque Tour and a podium place in the Flèche Wallonne. But when the Giro got going in May, it was neither Chiappucci nor Bugno, and certainly not an out-of-sorts LeMond, who set the early agenda. It was the Italian Franco Chioccioli of the Del Tongo MG boys team. The 31-year-old had still not got over losing his Maglia Rossa to Andy Hampstead on the snowy, blizzard-hit Gavia Pass in 1988 and was riding the race of his life. Nicknamed Il Copino, the Little Coppi, because of his resemblance to the Campionissimo, Chiocciolo was in pink when the race hit mainland Italy after the opening 3 stages in Sardinia. Eric Boyer, the Frenchman on Le Mans Z squad, had wrestled the jersey from Chiocciolo for one day. But the Italian was back in the driving seat after Marino Lejarreta, the Spanish leader on Eduardo Chozas' Once team, won a hilly stage in the Abruzzo. But a blistering time trial by Bugno on stage 10 saw the revived defending champion come within 1 second of Chiocioli's overall lead, with Chiappucci 56 seconds down in fourth, behind Lejarreta and the languid LeMond more than 3 minutes in arrears. Suddenly, the pack was stacked in Bugno's favour, until, out of the blue, Bugno cracked on the stage 12 hilltop finish in Monteviso, shipping 2 minutes on the first day in the Alps as Chiocciolo consolidated his lead. On the eve of the stage to Sestriere, his nearest rival was now Lejarreta, 30 seconds adrift, with Chiappucci in fourth, a further minute back. The second day in the Alps culminated with a double ascent to Sestriere, a twin bonanza for the Giro's first ever summit finish at the ski resort situated 2,035 metres above sea level in the Val Susa, 60 Roman miles from Turin, hence its name. This is where our man, Eduardo Chozas, enters the story. The Spaniard had been playing a support role for teammate Lajareta in what was his 23rd Grand Tour, having arrived in Italy off the back of an 11th place finish in the Vuelta. Still following the old season schedule, the Vuelta, in which Lajareta had finished third behind compatriots Melchor Mauri and Miguel Indurain, had come to an end just 1 week before the Giro's opening stage. In the previous day's opening chapter in the Alps, Chozas supported his team leader before dropping back to take a solid 7th place, a minute behind Lajareta and Chiappucci. While no threat to the GC, Chozas still lurked in 15th, 7 minutes and 22 seconds down, and was keen to leave his mark on the race. "The mountain stages were my goals to try for stage wins," Chozas says, "preferably those of the first half of the Giro, since I had ridden the Vuelta and I knew that the last week was going to be very hard for me due to the accumulation of fatigue." A break of 12 went early in the stage and included Chozas' Once teammate Luis Maria Diaz de Otazu. The gap was never very large, forcing Once to make their move after the first ascent of the Col Sestriere, with Chozas zipping clear in the wake of another rider after an earlier softener from teammate Santos Hernandez. "The break didn't have much of an advantage, so I was very attentive to the moves on the final ascent," says Chozas. "When an Italian cyclist attacked at the beginning of the final ascent, I went after him and opened up a gap on the peloton." Chozas quickly passed the remnants of the break and, surging through the pine forest to bring the snow-clad peaks into sight, he soon joined up with Hernandez and the Mexican Miguel Arroyo of Le Mans Z team on the front of the race. Behind, it was Chiappucci and the Malia Ciclamino who set the tempo in the group of favourites, flanked by Chioccioli in pink and Lajareta in the eye-catching yellow Once jersey, the one that changed colour to pink during the Tour to avoid confusion with the Maillot Jaune. Once were playing a blinder, the kind of move you expect to see, say, from a modern-day Movistar in the Vuelta, with two men ahead and their leader in the wheels of his rivals a bit further down the mountain. The stage was theirs to lose. A few kilometres from the summit, the gap between the two groups hovered above the minute mark as Chiappucci continued a long, unseated surge on the front, his purple jersey and those trademark blue Carrera shorts elegantly offset by his tanned arms and yellow helmet. It was a combination that, were they a thing at the time, would have merited the hearts in eyes emoji. "When I came to the front, I started to set the pace," Chozas says, "but I saw that it was better to stick with Arroyo for the time being and let my teammate attack." As Hernandez surged clear off the front, Bernesto's Pedro Delgado put in the first move from the pursuing group of favourites, the 1988 Tour de France winner riding in what was only the second Giro appearance of his career. Delgado was joined by the Frenchman Boyer before both riders were reeled in when Chiappucci, Chioccioli and Lajareta threw the hammer down to distance the struggling Buño, knocking another nail into the coffin of the defending champion. With sparks flying behind, it was time for Chozas to make his decisive move. "I stayed on the wheel of Arroyo for 500 metres and then dropped him with an attack before rejoining my teammate ahead," he recalls. "There were just 2 kilometres remaining, but our gap on the Chiappucci group was not big." Chozas and Chiappucci were not so much two peas in a pod as an apple and an orange in the large, colourful fruit salad that was the pro peloton. Calimero, Andriotti, Mondon, Chiappi, Moto Potuto, Indiano. These were all nicknames bandied around for the flamboyant 28-year-old Chiappucci. He even liked to call himself the Bionic Man, before finally settling on the one that stuck, El Diablo. But the reserved Chozas had no need for such nominal accoutrement. "I had no nickname," he explains. "My surname is rare enough as it is." While Chiappucci had won a stage and finished runner-up to Le Monde in Paris in 1990, making him a household name in Italy, Chozas had been a consistent performer in Grand Tours over the years, picking up 4 Tour stage wins and 2 Giro successes despite never cracking the top 5 on GC. In fact, Chozas had secured his 2nd Tour stage win at Serre Chevalier in 1986, in a way that would become typical of Chiappucci. A break of 150 kilometres and a winning margin of 6 minutes over Le Monde in yellow. I knew Chiappucci well, and watching the images back today, it's clear that he was the strongest of my pursuers, Chauzet says. He was so fast on climbs like that, and the final kilometre was agony for me to hold on to my advantage, which came down to just 15 seconds. I was listening to the Tifosi cheer on Chiappucci. The fans were so close, and I didn't know how I could get the strength to hold on until the end. I was almost over the limit, and it was my mind that made me overcome the difficulties and hold on. Having kicked clear of teammate Hernandez before the Flamme Rouge, Chauzas could practically feel the chasing trio breathing down his neck. Constantly looking over his shoulder and putting in surges out of the saddle, the Spaniard dug deep through the sea of Italian fans to hold on for the third and hardest fought Giro win of his career. Had the finish been just 50 metres further, Chiappucci could well have picked up a maiden Giro stage win, the Italian eventually crossing the line just 1 second behind a relieved Chauzas. Lejarreta and Chioccioli arrived 2 seconds back, with Hernandez settling for ninth place to give Once three riders in the top 10 after a near-perfect collective day in the saddle. Even when I watch it on video now, I get goosebumps because it was such a nail-biting finish, says Chauzas. It's very nice to see as a fan and, for me, remembering the effort I had to put in, the screaming of the fans, the deafening sound of the helicopter above, it was a whole world of sensations that culminated with an explosion of joy, winning at the top of Sestriere. The nature of the win made it the most memorable of Chauzas' career. My most important win was the legendary stage in the 1986 Tour with a finish on the Col de Granon in Serre-Chevalier, he says. I won after a 150-kilometre break, passing over the Col de Var and the Col d'Izoard in pole position. That day, I finished more than 6 minutes ahead of Le Monde and 10 minutes ahead of Bernardino. But this stage in Sestriere was just spectacular. With the good weather and crowds on the climb, for me, it was the most beautiful and spectacular victory I ever achieved. Spanish newspaper El País celebrated the exhibition laid on by Chauzas and his Once team, capped by Lejarreta sticking with the two Italian favourites to retain his second place on GC, 26 seconds down on Chioccioli. If these three riders confirm their status as the main contenders, the paper noted the significant deficits conceded by the likes of Bugno and Delgado, adding the following damning verdict. Already merely anecdotal is the disadvantage of other illustrious riders who have already lost all hope of a high finish, such as the American Greg LeMond and Frenchman Laurent Fignon. The paper quoted Once director sportif Manuel Saez, who claimed his main concern now was Chioccioli, because he is showing that he is capable of responding on the mountain, and because it seems that Bugno is not at his best. So, what happened next? Saez was right to fear Chioccioli most of all, for it was the Italian who held on to the Maglia Rossa in swashbuckling style, winning three stages, two in the Dolomites and the final time trial, and beating Chiappucci by almost 4 minutes in Milan. An all-Italian podium was completed by Max Lelli, with Bugno, despite a consolatory Stage 19 win, a distant fourth, almost 8 minutes in arrears. Having won the 1991 Giro in commanding fashion, capped by the individual time trial in which he flattened everyone, taking almost a minute off Bugno, Chioccioli begged the press to stop calling him Coppino. But they were having nothing of it. As for Bugno, he would turn things round later that year with victory in the World Championships in Stuttgart, doubling up a year later in Benidorm. And what of the gutsy Lejarreta? His pursuit of pink was undone by a crash on stage 17 on a day Fignon joined Le Monde, who had already quit the race, and withdrew. After shipping 6 minutes, the 34-year-old Lejarreta dropped to fifth place in the final standings, with Chauzas coming home in 10th. If Le Mans' poor performance might have given Chiappucci a boost for the Tour de France, The irrepressible rise of Spanish juggernaut Miguel Indurain put pay to any such wishful thinking. Le Monde wore the yellow jersey for 4 days, but eventually finished seventh, while El Diablo won a stage and took the polka dot jersey, but still finished almost 6 minutes behind in third place, as Big Mig took the first of his 5 successive tour wins by 3 minutes and 36 seconds over Bugno. That man Indurain won the next time the Giro returned to Sestriere, in a gruelling 55-kilometre time trial from Pinerolo that provided the cherry to the first tier of the cake that was the Spaniard's second Giro Tour double in 1993. Chiappucci, never the best against the clock, even on an uphill parkour, and with a cartoon devil on his helmet, finished 4 minutes down that day. But a year earlier, El Diablo had turned round his narrow loss to Chozas at Sestriere by recording one of the most staggering wins in cycling history. 40 years after Coppi's signature win in Sestriere, Chiappucci raised his hands aloft in the ski resort during the 1992 tour after a solo break of 6.5 hours during the brutally mountainous 254.5-kilometre Stage 13 from Sangiovese. With the stage finishing in his native Italy and on a climb synonymous with Il Campionissimo, Chiappucci targeted this as an opportunity to showcase his aggressive and unpredictable style against the steady, stoical, metronomic suffocation of the unflashy but clinical Indurain. El Diablo attacked on the Col de Cesi, the first climb of the day, 245 kilometres from the finish, ostensibly in pursuit of the KOM points that would help consolidate his polka dot jersey. He then kicked on at the foot of the Corme du Rosalon, taking 9 riders with him. Chiappucci tackled the next climb, the 37-kilometre-long Col de Isaran, the highest pass in the Alps, as if it were the final ascent of the day, with only Frenchman Richard Varenne able to hold on. With snowdrifts either side of him, the Italian went over the top 2 minutes clear of Varenne, causing carnage in his wake, with Le Monde, a Ferrari faced with Indurain's diesel-powered SUV, almost 20 minutes adrift. With Indurain and Bugno in pursuit, Chiappucci held on over the summit of Mont Cenis before securing what the author Richard Moore in his book Etape describes as one of the most extraordinary, almost unbelievable performances in Tour history. It was a victory that Chiappucci later put down to lots of passion, stubbornness, suffering, and willpower, glossing over the additional boost most riders of that generation enjoyed. Chiappucci later pointedly admitted to an Italian prosecutor that he had used EPO since 1993, the year after his win on Sestriere. His victory was made all the sweeter, adding chocolate sprinkles to the frothy milk, if you will, with the news that Le Monde, the man who once dubbed him Cappuccino, was one of 18 riders to finish outside the time limit, almost 50 minutes down. Asked by Moore whether that brought a smile to his face, Chiappucci said, "I was already finished with him. After the 1990 tour, he just didn't exist, in my book. But, yeah, it gave me a lot of pleasure to force him out." The man who held him off in Sestriere a year earlier was also happy to see his friend pull off such an emphatic victory on the same summit. "I really liked that he won, because he was a very brave and a very good rider," Chozas says. "I also got along very well with him. We had become good friends in his first Giro appearances, where we escaped together in various stages, and he was one of the first to congratulate me after my victory in 1991. Chiappucci might have won the battle at Sestriere in 1992, but the deadly Indurain won the war to secure a second successive tour by more than 4 minutes on El Diablo. It was the third Grand Tour out of 4 that saw Chiappucci finish bridesmaid to the polygamous peddler from Spain. In 1993, Chiappucci finished third in the Giro as Indurain won a second successive Maglia Rossa ahead of his third Tour de France win. For all his pizzazz, Chiappucci never won a Grand Tour, despite a run of 6 races finishing on the podium. All this while still living at home with his mother, who made vests that his family sold in a small textile shop and at local markets in Lombardy. "The vests are of a very good quality flannel," he once said. "They are not white, they're buff, but they are very warm and absorbing. Stephen Roche orders them all the time, and several other riders wear them." Chozas never wore a Chiappucci vest, and he never won another Grand Tour stage either. His Sestriere success the 17th and final notch in his career bedpost. 2 months later, though, both he and Lejarreta rode the Tour, their third of the season, with Chozas the best-placed Once rider in 11th, exactly 21 minutes behind Indurain. Chozas became only the fifth rider in history to finish in the top 20 of all three Grand Tours in the same season, after Raffaele Geminiani in 1955, Gaston Nencini in 1957, Federico Bahamontes 1958, and his teammate Lejarreta in 1989. It would be another 19 years before this feat was repeated by Carlos Sastre in 2010. Chozas retired in 1993, aged 33, after two more Grand Tours, taking his career tally to 27, of which he completed 26. It would be another record not matched until Matteo Tosato in 2015, after the Italian also completed 26 Grand Tours. Tosato would add two more before his own retirement, finally completing 28 of his 34 Grand Tours, more than anyone in history. Does Chozas perhaps now regret not finishing the 1984 Vuelta, which he quit on the final day? "I didn't start the last stage because I wasn't feeling very well for a few days, and I had to go to the Giro afterwards," he says. "At the time, I didn't think much of it, but perhaps now, with the perspective of time, it would have been wiser to finish the easy final stage to make it 27 out of 27. One thing that's certain is that Chozas will be watching stage 20 of the 2020 Giro, should it ever take place, with added interest following his beautiful win in Sestriere. Not only will the Col Sestriere be the final and perhaps deciding climb of the entire race, Chozas will once again be drawing on his experience as a pundit for Spanish Eurosport. "An arrival in Sestriere will always be an important stage of the Giro," he says of the 200km test, which also features the Col dell'Agnello, the Col d'Azur, and Mont Genèvre. "With a hard profile and many alpine peaks of considerable hardness, only one of the best climbers of the Giro will win. I have always followed the arrivals at Sestriere very carefully since my victory, because the winners are usually heavily linked to the history of cycling." A victory in the vein of Chozas in 1991, or Chiappucci 1 year later, would make stage 20 of this season's Giro d'Italia rather special. This has been another episode of Recycle by Eurosport, written by Felix Lowe and narrated by me, Graham Wilgos. Produced by Pete Burton. You can read more from Felix on Twitter at Saddleblaze, and you can find me at Graham Wilgos. Finding Pete on social media is like a digital game of Where's Wally? Good luck. You can, however, easily find Eurosport on Twitter at Eurosport_UK. Plus, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. If you've enjoyed this or any other episode, please do subscribe, share, and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Stay safe, look after each other, and join us for our next episode when we're flying back to 1951 with Wim van Est, the first Dutchman to lead the Tour de France. Van Est was forced out of the race while still in yellow, less than 24 hours after plunging into a ravine on the Col d'Aubisque. We revisit his short tenure in the Maillot Jaune and the fleeting reign of the Swiss pedaleur de charme, Hugo Coblet.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.